posture, standing up tall, long neck, head back, shoulders back and down, ribcage raised and elevated, glutes firing, active and switched on. Consciously trying to make these changes is not usually a successful long-term strategy. I spent years trying to implement the old commandment of pulling the shoulders back and standing up straight, but it didn't work because I was not re-educating my brain. Gary's approach is aimed at moving the body to wake these extensor chain muscles up, switch your glutes on, and make you stand up tall without ever having to think about it. Because we spend so much of our modern lives hunched over, we've lost the ability to extend and be upright. We've got this almost fetal-like flexed posture from sitting in chairs and looking at screens and phones all day. A lot of the corrective work that people find themselves having to undergo involves restoring their powers of extension. When we fail to access our own extensor chain, one of the major muscle groups that deactivates and goes to sleep is the glutes. Extend, extend, extend. This has been my mantra for the past few years, and I hope it will become yours as well. We need to reteach our body to extend. People struggle to extend their hips. People struggle to extend their spines. Of course, sitting less is extremely helpful, but it doesn't automatically allow our bodies to experience extension. Most of us will need help in order to access our body's powers of extension in full. When people are working on their bodies today, they tend to focus too much on the mirror muscles, which are the ones you can see in the mirror, and so, naturally, the ones they prefer to work on. They get caught up in exercises that make the mirror muscles look good, such as bench presses, biceps curls, and sit-ups. All these exercises ask the body to flex. We need far more focus on the muscles we can't see in the mirror, such as the ones on our back that extend the body and make it stand up straight. As a teenager, a classic, tall, skinny Indian kid, I remember being in the changing room at school and I could see my ribs. That made me extremely self-conscious. Meanwhile, I was being exposed to pictures of buff men in all the fitness magazines. I started doing chest presses and sit-ups every day. I kept this up for about 2 years and, yes, I put on muscle. But I also inadvertently changed all of my body movement mechanics. Was it worth it? Absolutely not. I had to spend years in pain and then years of corrective exercising to undo the damage I'd caused. My mistake was being motivated purely by vanity and focusing on the mirror muscles. I see this whenever I'm in a gym. Bodybuilders with overflexed and hunched shoulders, flat feet, and rounded spines clearly walking around with poor posture and limited mobility. I've always prided myself on being particularly open-minded as a doctor. And I'm always enthusiastic about learning new things from different healthcare professionals. I was actually the first medical doctor to study with Gary, and what blew my mind about him was the fact that he saw the body in exactly the same way that I saw health. He was motivated by a desire to understand the root cause of problems rather than simply suppress bodily symptoms. When I came to him with my back problem, he very quickly identified that my right foot was stuck in pronation. In other words, my foot arch had effectively collapsed and my foot was flat, and so unable to access its opposite posture. Podiatrists had told me about my flat foot before, but simply prescribed orthotic insoles, which hadn't worked. Gary had a different solution. He told me he needed to get my right foot working again, insisting that was the key to my back problems. But, you might be thinking, what has this got to do with glutes? Well, in our massively connected bodies, there's actually a strong link between our foot muscles and our glute muscles. If one of our feet isn't working properly, this can directly affect our glutes, and vice versa. It turned out that my right glute muscle wasn't switching on, and this meant my back was always going to struggle. My back was taking the strain instead of my sleepy backside. Under Gary's guidance, it soon became clear why none of those, from physical therapists to massage therapists, who'd been manipulating my back over the years, had solved the problem. They'd only ever been offering a temporary band-aid fix. To completely heal my back, Gary had to teach me to reprogram these damaging patterns and re-educate my body. I had to get my feet working correctly again, This, in turn, would reawaken my glute muscles. Incredibly, with just 5 minutes of exercise per day, over the course of less than a week, my long-standing back problems vanished. My exercises were based largely on the four I have detailed at the end of this section. It was the nearest thing to a miracle I've ever witnessed. Now, a few years on, I have a natural right foot arch, my right glute is firing appropriately, and my back pain has never resurfaced. Thanks to Gary, my body has returned to its natural state. I'm now back to playing squash and skiing down mogul runs with no concerns at all. This has been completely life-changing for me. Day to day, I am able to move my body more freely, re-engage with activities that I love but had to previously shun. This has had tremendous ripple effects. I'm happier and fitter, and I have more energy and an improved sense of well-being. I'm living a life that was completely unimaginable to me only 6 years ago. It was in Gary's brilliant book, What the Foot, and in his training courses, that I first learned about the importance of glutes and how we must reawaken them in order to combat the effects of our flexed, hunched-over lifestyles. The glutes are extensor chain muscles. They aid the extension of the hip, which is the motion we make when standing up or coming out of a squat, as opposed to the flexion we make when bending at the hip to sit down. Hip extension and glute contraction should happen together. But in our superflexed world, we're missing the ability to extend our hips properly. I want you to learn how to move your whole body to access hip extension using the following four exercises. I believe that these exercises will give your body the opportunity to awaken your glutes forevermore. Some of you might have been through the rigmarole of extending your hips after many a physical therapy session, and you might even have come to the conclusion that it doesn't work. If so, I suspect your discomforts have continued. But this is where Gary's unique philosophy kicks in. He believes that we've become flexed to such an extent that when we even try to extend using the traditional exercises, we slip into bad habits. Our bodies have simply forgotten how to move as they should. Whenever we stand up, we're supposed to be using our glutes. Most of us don't. Our brains bypass the glutes using other muscles. In order to retrain the brain, Gary has created a series of exercises that invite it to fire the right muscles. The important thing to know is that we can't simply consciously decide to use our glutes and therefore extend properly. Our brains make these decisions for us unconsciously. Therefore, we need exercises that remind the brain how to trigger the correct muscles, and this is exactly what Gary has designed. Here's just one example. By bending the hip fully, we create a situation in which the only movement left available is one of proper extension. When we lie on our front and lift one of our legs, we should be doing it using our glute. But when instructed to do this, the brain has many options. Because our glutes are switched off, it tends to choose easier ones. Gary's movements make it so the brain has no option but to lift the leg in the proper way, using the glute. Gary and I have come up with four movements that are designed to get your feet moving, your hips extending, and your glutes firing. They'll help retrain your brain to operate your body in accordance with the way it was designed. They can be carried out individually or as part of a group. Note, all movements should be made either barefoot or with socks on, and illustrations can be found in the downloaded PDF. Movement 1. Flex on a step. This can be any exercise step like a standard aerobic step, a baby step stool, or even your lowest stair. The exercise is designed to wake up your glutes by flexing your hip joint. The step raises the foot off the ground, which encourages your hip flexion. As you bend and reach forward with your arms, you'll experience the glute lengthening. As you get to your end range of motion, which is the furthest point you can comfortably go, you'll naturally find yourself rocking back to the start position. You then go again. These movements are not to be held, like a stretch or a yoga pose. The idea is to gently move in and out of them, gradually increasing the range as you go. 1. Place one foot on a step and and the other, the trailing foot, on the ground behind you, as in a stride. 2. Bend the knee of the front leg forward toward the toes. Avoid consciously controlling the movement of the knee. Allow it to go where it comfortably wants to go as you execute the movement. Although the usual advice is to position the knee over the toe, Gary taught me that this actually limits our motion. Allowing it to follow the movements of the foot and hip is much more liberating for the body. 3. As you bend the front knee, your hip will be drawn forward over the step toward the foot. 4. Gently reach out in front of you toward the horizon with your hands at hip height. As you move forward, the heel of the trailing foot will start to lift. This is perfectly normal. 5. As your hands reach forward at hip height, allow your upper body to follow as you attempt to reach as far as you comfortably can along this axis. Your body should bend forward as a result of your hands reaching out. 6. Our aim is to put most of our weight through the front foot on the step, with our hips sitting above the foot and reaching forward with our arms, as in the picture. 7. As you become comfortable with this movement, and perhaps begin to find it easy, you can gradually lower your reach to knee height and out toward the horizon. 8. A long-term goal might be to safely place your fingertips on, or ideally beyond, the step. Do not hold these end positions, but mindfully travel in and out of them back to upright. 9. Go as comfortably low as you feel is appropriate for you. 10. Repeat on the other leg. For variation, reach forward with only either the right or left hand to this position. For progressions of this movement, please see the online videos at drchatterjee.com. Movement 2, the hip adduction. This movement wakes the glute up in more than one way. It uses flexion, but it also uses the lateral motion of the hip. This is a whole body movement which targets the glutes and many other muscles which constitute the extensor chain. 1. Stand on a step. 2. Choose a leg to stand on. 3. While bending the knee of the standing leg, reach with the opposite foot behind and to the side, a bit like a curtsy, so that the toes of the reaching leg touch the floor. 4. Allow the weight-bearing knee to bend and to comfortably go where it wants. Avoid consciously controlling the position of the knee. 5. This begins to pull down the pelvis on the reaching leg side and hike up the pelvis on the standing leg side. 6. Raise the arm on the same side as your reaching leg and extend it toward the ceiling. When you reach high into your most comfortable end range, notice the stretch in that side of your abdomen. 7. You must maintain full weight bearing at all times on the standing leg. There is a temptation to put some weight on the reaching foot when it touches the floor. This should not happen. It should only tap the floor, not rest on it. 8. At your lowest comfortable point, bring yourself back up to standing and lower the opposite arm. 9. Allow both feet to rest on the step between repetitions of the same movement. 10. Change legs and repeat. Movement 3. Foot clocks. Your glute movements are connected to the movement of your feet. Healthy foot motion naturally contributes to the glute lengthening in the correct way. This exercise will help make this happen. In addition, you can start to identify dark spaces in your movement. These are the movements that your brain is not used to making. It's only by moving into these spaces that you can begin to reawaken pathways in your brain that have gone to sleep. 1. Start by standing with both feet together. Imagine yourself in the center of a large clock. 2. Relax the toes and choose a leg to stand on. 3. With the toes of the other leg, tap lightly at clock position 12 o'clock. Keep the tapping leg straight while allowing the standing leg to bend. The tapping leg should be stretched out as far as you can comfortably reach. 4. After tapping, return to the start position. 5. Most of your weight should remain on the standing leg. This is the one that remains in the middle of the clock face. 6. Allow the foot and knee of the standing leg to move freely, as in the first two movements on the previous pages. 7. Begin a series of movements in which your reaching leg moves around the side of the clock, That's the same side as your reaching leg. So, if standing on your right leg, follow the clock around from 12 counterclockwise to the left. Each time, ensure that the toes of the reaching leg only tap the floor lightly. The majority of your weight should remain on your standing leg. 8. Standing on your right leg, aim to get as far around as 7 with the left leg. 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7. Return to the start position before reaching to the next number on the clock face. Repeat this sequence between 5 and 10 times. 9. Standing on your left leg, aim to get as far around as 5 with the right leg. 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then go back to the start position. Repeat this sequence between 5 and 10 times. 10. As the knee of your standing leg bends and your other foot moves, your glutes will be encouraged to work. 11. Your focus is on the standing leg as the muscles react to the knee bending, the hip flexing, and the foot flattening. The further you reach with your tapping leg, the more you will be activating your glutes. 12. Ensure that you work both legs. Movement 4. 3D hip extension. This movement puts all the joints in the body into a position that gives the glutes no option but to be fully activated. The front leg will experience the lengthening of its corresponding glute, while the back leg will experience a full glute shortening. Working both sides means you'll be able to experience the full range of motion for both glutes. 1. Start by standing with your feet hip-width apart. 2. Place one foot forward at a comfortable distance. This distance will vary between individuals, and you'll need to do some experimentation. Start with a distance of 20 inches between the back foot big toe and the front foot one. 3. Relax the toes. 4. Bend the knee of your front foot while allowing the heel of the back foot to come up off the floor. You should keep the toes of the back foot on the ground. 5. Your weight should be mostly on the front foot. Try to let your pelvis move forward and come over your front foot. 6. Your torso should remain upright. 7. Try to think about your body moving forward and not down. This is not a gym-type lunge. 8. Keep the back knee straight and gently rotate it outward, without bending it, while keeping the back toes pointing straight forward. 9. The idea is to keep your head over your rib cage over your pelvis, and your pelvis over your front foot, so you're all nice and stacked. If you feel any pressure in your lower back, it's likely you're not achieving this. 10. Raise both arms toward the ceiling. 11. Return to the starting position. Do this between 5 and 10 times on each leg. When you become comfortable with this movement, try one of the multiple progressions shown at drchatterjee.com. Tips to wake up your glutes. My recommendation is that you do at least one of these four movements every single day. Once you know what you're doing, they don't take long. Any one of them can take under a minute. What's more, these are not gym-style exercises that will get you all sweaty. You don't need to change clothes, you don't need to schedule them in. They won't make you lose your breath. It's crucially important to keep reminding your body that it should be switching your glutes on, and the best part is, it takes hardly any time or effort at all. I do these exercises every single morning, while my coffee's brewing, in order to prepare my body for the day ahead. If you can fit in all four of them, in a quick 5-minute morning movement session, all of your subsequent movements throughout the day will be more efficient and more in harmony with the way your body is designed to move. Try to do the whole series at least 4 times per week. Note, if you have any concerns whatsoever about performing any of the suggested movements in this pillar, you should consult a healthcare professional beforehand. Sleep. We're in the middle of a sleep deprivation epidemic. We not only have far too many distractions in our daily lives, but we also live in a sleep-is-for-wimps culture that associates this natural and critical bodily function with laziness. Scientists from Oxford University claim we're getting between 1 and 2 hours less sleep per night than we did 60 years ago. In the context of an 8-hour sleep cycle, that's a hugely significant drop of up to 25%. Want to know how damaging this is? It's actually possible to put a number on at least one aspect of it. Sleep deprivation is thought to cost the British economy about £40 billion, about $55 billion, a year. But this is a problem that goes far beyond financial cost. It's actively dangerous. Every time we drive when we're sleep-deprived, we're putting lives at risk. Recently, I spent some time at a specialist center in Guildford, UK, to see this for myself. Using a simulator, the test subject drove the same route 3 times, first under normal conditions, then after drinking enough alcohol to remain just under the drink-and-drive cutoff, and finally, when he'd been restricted to having only 3 hours sleep. When tired, following his sleep restriction, he took up to 4 seconds to react to a hazard. This was a far worse result than when he'd had a drink. What I saw that day backs up a classic study from 1997 from the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in South Australia. The authors concluded that relatively moderate levels of fatigue impair performance to an extent equivalent to or greater than is currently acceptable for alcohol intoxication. While this in itself is extremely worrying, what sleep researchers find particularly dangerous is that many sleep-deprived individuals don't even realize they're fatigued and their performance impaired. Their perception is that they're doing very well. But who isn't guilty of cutting corners on their sleep? I see it all the time with my patients, and I've done it myself. When I'm feeling tired on the sofa in the evening, it's so tempting to keep watching television or mindlessly surf the internet rather than making an active decision to fall asleep. You know the score, and so do I. But as I've immersed myself in sleep research over the past few years, I've changed the priority I give to sleep. It's no exaggeration to describe the results as life-changing. I feel happier, stronger, and more alert, and my productivity has improved significantly. The legendary sleep researcher, Dr. Alan Rachjaffen, once wrote, "If sleep does not serve an absolutely vital function, then it is the biggest mistake the evolutionary process ever made." I love that quote, because it really captures something not only about the vastness of sleep, but also of its mystery. Scientists are still teasing out some highly significant aspects of exactly what happens when we sleep, and there's still much we don't know. All animals sleep, and the consequences of not doing so can be drastic. Rats deprived of their shut-eye die within a month. The longest any human has managed to stay awake is a mere 11 days. When seriously sleep-deprived, people usually hallucinate and can even have fits. The fact that we spend a third of our entire lives asleep just hints at how critical it is for both our mental and physical well-being. Getting sufficient high-quality sleep is essential for the proper functioning of our minds and bodies. It's a core physiological process that many of us inadvertently regard as optional. Professor Matt Walker at the University of California, Berkeley, says, "There is no tissue within the body and no process within the brain that is not enhanced by sleep or demonstrably impaired when you don't get enough." Here are just a few of the benefits we get from safeguarding our quality sleep time. During sleep, we allow the body to actively recover itself. As we discovered earlier, the bodily spring cleaning process known as autophagy is critical, and it's principally during sleep that our bodies mop up a lot of the waste that's accumulated in our cells during the day. It's thought that, when we sleep, our brain cells shrink in size to allow gaps to open up between our nerve cells, which allows our brain to wash away waste products that build up and accumulate while awake. To give one example, researchers believe that sleep is the time when we clear out the protein beta amyloid, which accumulates in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. Sleep also helps us lay down new memories by promoting the growth of new nerve cells. All three of the previous pillars feed directly into this one, and vice versa. When you sleep well, it's much easier to make better choices the following day. You crave less sugary food and feel more energetic, which in turn means you're inclined to be more physically active on the one hand, and to engage in relaxation practices such as meditation on the other. Such behavior is self-reinforcing. When you're more physically active, eat healthy food, and prioritize relaxation, you'll sleep even better. The potential benefits of a good night's sleep include increased energy, improved concentration, greater capacity to learn, better ability to make healthy food choices, improved immune system function, enhanced autophagy, reduced risk of developing chronic diseases such as type 2 diabetes, better memory, increased life expectancy, reduced risk of being overweight, reduced stress levels, reduced risk of developing Alzheimer's. The consequences of not sleeping. I believe that sleep is arguably the most undervalued component of health in today's society. It has come to be regarded as optional, something we can do without. We're even made to feel as if we're somehow weak if we demand more and better sleep. But if we don't sleep, the consequences for our health can be serious. It's simply not true that we can get by perfectly well on insufficient sleep. It's a myth perpetuated by our modern culture and economy, which values those who do more. The damage lack of sleep can do is widespread and serious. It is well recognized now that even short-term sleep deprivation causes increased levels of the stress hormone cortisol, raises blood pressure, and impairs our body's ability to regulate blood sugar. It also activates our sympathetic nervous system, which can make us feel jumpy and stressed, increases levels of inflammation, and decreases levels of leptin, the hormone that helps us feel full after eating. And there's a double hit in this respect, because it's been established that, when we are sleep-deprived, we produce more of a hormone called ghrelin. Ghrelin stimulates hunger. So by not sleeping, we feel less full thanks to one hormone and more hungry thanks to another. Now it should be starting to become clear why so many of us struggle to stick with our healthy food choices and exercise regimens. It also helps to explain why, if you sleep better, your goals for the other pillars will become much easier to achieve. Plenty of studies link lack of sleep to obesity and type 2 diabetes. One found that just 4 nights sleep deprivation caused significant insulin resistance, while another argued that sleep problems may precede conditions such as anxiety and depression. Sleep also plays a role in our metabolic pathways, which affect how we manage blood sugar and our immune system, which impacts how frequently we get a cold, how inflamed we are, and even how our neural pathways work. The prestigious journal Nature published a revealing study in 2016 showing that long-term broken sleep in mice resulted in the following reversible changes: increased leptin levels, increased gut permeability, leaky gut, increased inflammation, increased fat mass, increased insulin resistance. Similar mechanisms are thought to exist in the human body. Sleep debt. Unfortunately, we can't dodge the effects of sleep deprivation by having a bit of a lie-in on a Sunday morning. Studies show that we accrue sleep debt, which we can't just repay with a couple of cheeky extra hours here and there. One, in particular, looked at typical performance impairments that are caused by mild chronic sleep deprivation, which is the type that many of us are experiencing these days. It found that, even after 3 days of recovery, many of the debilitating effects remained. The consequences of sleep deprivation include increased risk of type 2 diabetes, increased risk of being overweight, decreased cognitive ability, poor performance at work, increased likelihood of being involved in a road traffic accident, increased chance of psychiatric disorders. How much sleep do we need? My definition of good sleep is not a number. I don't know what the right amount of sleep is for you. It's not just a question of hours, it's also about quality. To assess the health of my patient's sleep, I've devised a chart that I call RATE, that you can find in the enhancement that comes with this audiobook. RATE involves 3 simple questions that provide an immediate snapshot of your sleep health. Waking up feeling refreshed is a good general barometer of overall health. Waking up at the same time, give or take 30 minutes, without an alarm, is a good indicator that your body's intrinsic biological rhythms are working well. Some of you may find this question difficult because you have children or a pet that acts as your alarm. If so, just stick to the other two questions and score yourself out of four. Not being able to drop off within 30 minutes of trying, time elapsed, means that there is likely to be something in your lifestyle that is untraining your body's own natural ability to sleep. A score of 0 indicates poor sleep health, and a score of 6 is excellent. Anything under 6 means you could benefit significantly from the interventions in this pillar. Why not rate your sleep now? After scoring your own sleep and reading about the consequences of not getting enough, some of you may be starting to panic. There really is no need. In over 17 years of practice, I've learned that the majority of sleep problems are lifestyle related. This pillar is designed to help you identify what those lifestyle factors might be and how you can actively change them. Many of my patients find that, most of the time, choosing 3 of the 5 interventions seems to be enough. Of course, all of the interventions will be helpful, but for many of us, doing all 5 will be unrealistic. I would love you to discover how many of them you need to do in the context of your life in order to reach your own personal threshold. As you read through the sleep pillar, start thinking about which interventions you can introduce into your life immediately. I have found that the third intervention, create a bedtime routine, is particularly helpful. It focuses on actively winding down prior to hitting the sack and, hopefully, will soon have you sleeping like a baby. 1. Create an environment of absolute darkness. Try to keep your bedroom completely dark and free of televisions or e-devices. One of the simplest hacks I recommend is making sure the environment in which we go to bed is completely dark. Darkness is a signal to our bodies that it's time to rest. It triggers the production of melatonin, which is the hormone that's largely responsible for helping us go to sleep. People who enjoy camping will always tell you that they sleep well. Why? Because they're suddenly immersed in the natural cycle of daily light that dims slowly, then they spend some time with perhaps a firelit that gives out a particular kind of orangey-yellow light, and then absolute darkness. Over the past few years, I've become aware of the trend for hotel rooms to contain more and more light sources that don't switch off at night. Air conditioning controls, TV LEDs, electric alarm clocks, blue nightlights, and much more besides. As technology advances, so the number increases. It can be hard to drop off with so many lights on. They feel intrusive to me and offensive. I've got into the habit of unplugging everything and even, when that can't be done, putting black tape over them. Some of my patients who frequently stay in hotels have also reported significant improvements in their sleep when they implement a no-tolerance policy for light. And what goes for hotel rooms also goes for our own homes, of course. Many of my patients have found that the glow of an electric clock can impact getting to sleep in the first place, or dropping back off if they wake during the night. Light pollution from street lamps is also very common. This is why I strongly recommend installing blackout blinds or extra thick curtains. To understand why controlling our bedroom light levels is so crucially important, we once again have to travel back many millennia to the ancient eras in which the human machine was doing much of its evolving. All organisms on Earth have evolved around the sun, and humans are no exception. As we've already discovered, our bodies run on a complex symphony of cycles. Everything from our immune system function, our gut function, our muscle strength, and our hormones shows a daily rhythm. Circa is Latin for around, and diem, or dien, means day. Controlling and conducting all of these circadian rhythms is the brain's master body clock, the suprachiasmatic nucleus, SCN. All of our bodily functions are in some way influenced by the SCN. But the strange thing about it is that, without clues from the outside world, this clock system does not run precisely on a 24-hour cycle. What keeps our circadian clock system in time is light and dark cycles. It uses these clues from the outside world to make running adjustments to its timings. This is why we're so sensitive to changes in light, and why messing with them can have such powerful effects. When we abuse our exposure to light, we abuse our body clock. We shift it forward or backward, which throws many of our cycles out of whack. And yet too little light in the morning and too much at night is increasingly the norm these days. Over at the Sleep and Circadian Neuroscience Institute at Oxford University, Professor Russell Foster is one of Britain's foremost researchers in this area. He's called us the supremely arrogant species because we think we can override the millions of years of evolution that created these rhythms within us. I love that line. It's spot on. We think we can stay up late under artificial light without consequences for our health. We forget the extraordinary power light has over the human machine. Light is a drug. It changes parts of the body on a molecular level. It changes the way certain genes are expressed. And most of us have no idea just how sensitive we are to it. One remarkable study suggested that, even when our eyes are closed and a flashlight is shone behind our knees, our circadian rhythm can be affected. Although some scientists have argued about that study's reproducibility and its exact significance, it certainly supports the broader idea that there may be light-sensitive mechanisms that do not involve the eye. In any event, even if our eyes are firmly closed, light can still penetrate the eyelids. Suprachiasmatic nucleus, SCN. The SCN is the master regulator of our body's internal clock. It sits in a part of our brain called the hypothalamus. It orchestrates all of our body's functions by synchronizing and coordinating with all of our body's other clocks. Exposure to bright light. Exposure to bright light after sunset is a modern phenomenon. It began with the advent of street lighting about 100 years ago. But in the past decade, the problem has become a great deal worse with the boom in electronic devices and the habit so many of us have got into of taking them to bed with us. Of course, some exposure to artificial light is essential. We can no longer simply choose to go to sleep when it gets dark. What we can do, though, is try to limit the effects of our modern light-filled lifestyles. Smartphones and tablets. One of the worst things you can do in the hour or two before bed is look at your smartphone or tablet. Believe it or not, these electronic devices emit the same wavelength of light as the morning sun. Confusingly, it's called blue light. And just by looking at our phones, we're duping our bodies into thinking it's the start of the day. You're giving your brain a signal that says, it's not bedtime. When that blue light hits the back of your retinas, signals are sent to your pineal gland, telling it not to make any more of the sleep hormone, melatonin. We know that even a glance at the light a smartphone emits can impact melatonin secretion. In order to mitigate this, I've installed an application called F.Lux on my iPhone that lowers the amount of blue light emitted from its screen. Versions are also available for Mac, Windows, and Android operating systems. There is also an app called Twilight for Android phones. Apple and many Android phones now come with their own nighttime mode that alters both the intensity and the frequency of the light your phone emits, enabling you to reduce blue light emissions without the use of an app. This isn't as good as going without your phone completely, but it is a step in the right direction for those of us who are inseparably attached to our devices. If you really must look at them late at night, I'd recommend buying some amber glasses. The amber lenses help to filter the blue light from your screen. I have patients who can feel extremely sleepy within an hour of wearing them, which tells me how great an effect blue light exposure had been having. Amber glasses usually work better than the apps and can be bought online for as little as $10. At home, my wife and I have tried to institute a rule that says unless there's some kind of exceptional circumstance, our phones and laptops go off at 8:30 p.m. and we don't bring them upstairs. I know that if I bring my phone upstairs, almost without realizing what I'm doing, I'll find myself scrolling down my social media feeds, and the next thing I know, I'm wide awake, thinking about the news story I've just read, or seeing the halo of light from the screen still flashing behind my eyes. Do we always manage to stick to this rule? If I'm being completely honest, the answer is no. But when we do, we both feel the difference. Television. What goes for e-devices also goes for television. Many of us like to watch TV in the evenings, Unfortunately, it's now well established that viewing time correlates with an increased risk of all-cause cardiovascular disease mortality. In short, it appears that the more television you watch, the more likely you are to die. Why? There are lots of theories about this, including that it's a sedentary pastime. But I can't help but wonder about the effect of all that bright light before bed. Is it messing with our circadian rhythms? One of the functions of light and the circadian clock is to signal to our bodies when it's time to eat. The good news is, when you restrict your eating times as described in the Eat Pillar, you spontaneously reduce your calorie intake and you're also getting your food when your body is attuned and expecting to get it. What's more, assuming you're eating in daylight hours, restricting your food window also helps normalize your circadian rhythm, which aids sleep. I recommend that you remove your television from your bedroom completely. If you must watch it in the evening, turn it off at least 30 minutes before going to bed. I'd love you to push this to 90 minutes, but I do understand that this will be hard for many. Although televisions do emit blue light, the fact that you're further from the screen makes it less of an issue than with tablets and smartphones. If you do end up in front of the TV in the evening, consider what you're watching. The news can be full of grief, trauma, and anxiety. Is that what you need inside your brain right before bed? Perhaps a feel-good film, a light-hearted comedy, or a travel documentary would be more positive and calming. Embrace red light. So you now have a perfectly dark sleeping environment. Your e-devices have been expelled and your bedroom television is in the shed. You have blackout blinds installed or extra thick, well-fitted curtains. Light has been systematically abolished. But what happens if you need to get up in the night? In cases like these, or if your kids demand a nightlight, you should consider using red light. Red is the wavelength that has the least impact on your body's circadian clock. My own experience with this has been life-changing. Like many of you, I have young children. They've always been early risers, and I'm okay with that as they go to bed pretty early. They've always liked having a nightlight, and we used to put a dim white one on in the corridor outside their room. However, after reading the research on red light, I bought one for their bedroom instead. This instantly caused them to sleep for an hour longer than they used to. I've heard similar stories in my practice. Staring at the sun. I've had many patients for whom lighting adjustment was a game changer. Recently I saw Isabel, a 34-year-old who'd been struggling with fatigue. She didn't have any other health complaints, just a general lack of energy. Once we dug a little deeper into her life, it became clear that sleep had become an issue. She tried all kinds of things in the past, including over-the-counter sleep aids and even stronger sleeping pills. As we chatted, I discovered that she spent the last 90 minutes before turning out the light staring at her phone. This is like staring at the sun right before closing your eyes for sleep, I told her. You're giving your body a signal to be awake. But as hard as I tried, I just couldn't convince her to go without her phone. We eventually compromised on a pair of amber glasses. Instantly, she started to sleep better. A few weeks later, she came back and was so convinced by what I told her that she actually started to switch off her devices 90 minutes before bed. She now puts on her amber glasses at 7:30 p.m. to block out all blue light in the evening. Once she gets to 9:30 p.m., all her screens go off. She then falls asleep at around 11 o'clock. And what difference has all this made to her? She's like a new person. And it's all because she sleeps better. She now makes healthier food choices, her mood is elevated, and she exercises more. Isabel is a classic example of how making changes in one pillar feeds into all the other pillars. Once we did one thing that started to improve the way she felt, it triggered a cascade of benefits which, in turn, gave her the energy and motivation to make further improvement. She is living, breathing, thriving proof of the incredible power of making simple, sustainable changes to your lifestyle. Tips to help you embrace darkness. Fit correctly sized extra thick curtains or, even better, blackout blinds. Remove all screens from your bedroom, laptops, phones, televisions. Buy an old-fashioned alarm clock. Ensure any landing curtains are blacked out and drawn. light can easily leak into your bedroom from elsewhere in the house. Leave your chargers in another room to avoid bringing your phone into the bedroom. Buy a red nightlight. Buy amber glasses to help minimize blue light exposure in the evening. 2. Embrace morning light. Spend at least 20 minutes outside without sunglasses every morning. By making conscious changes to our lifestyle, we make unconscious changes to our biology. At any given moment, untold numbers of complex and vital processes are starting, stopping, and running in our bodies, and a great many of them rely on signals from the outside world to know when and how to run. We've just talked about how making the conscious decision to manage the darkness levels in our sleeping environments can trigger a wealth of unconscious processes that first help us get to sleep, then help us sleep better, and then have a number of amazing effects on our health and decision-making. But just as we should manage darkness at night, we should also manage our light in the mornings. Prioritizing sleep starts the minute we get up, and one of the best things we can do is get outdoors in natural daylight. Our exposure to the sun in the morning is a critical part of our evolutionary heritage. It's critical for feelings of well-being in the day, but also for good quality sleep at night. Over the past 2 years, I've even found myself persuading some of my patients to have their morning cup of tea in the garden with a fleece on. I'm still working on my mother. She's taken on board nearly all of my lifestyle advice, but this one is proving to be a challenge for her. You might doubt the point of all this if you look out of your window and see it's a grim and dim day, but it doesn't matter if it's cloudy. Even on the dullest days, we're still exposing ourselves to light at a higher amount outdoors than if we were in. Light is quantified in units called lux. Full sunlight gives us about 30,000 lux, and going outside on a cloudy day gives roughly 10,000. If we're in a brightly lit indoor room, we're unlikely to be getting any more than 500 lux. What's more, the retinal photoreceptors that exist in the eye are most sensitive to a short wavelength blue-green light. In nature, we get exposure to this light only in the morning hours. This light information goes to our central body clock, or SCN, which, through the nervous system, orchestrates all of our body's peripheral clocks and rhythms. The differential between your maximum and minimum light exposure is also important in helping set your body's rhythms. If you wake up and have breakfast at home indoors, travel to and from work in an enclosed vehicle, and spend all day inside a building, you may hardly ever be outside. Your body is almost never exposed to natural light. You probably won't ever hit above 500 lux. Clearly, that has huge potential to disrupt your body's rhythms. Getting the right kind of light at the right point in the day can have amazing effects throughout our bodies. Researchers in a 2014 study gave subjects a special wristwatch that also measured their exposure to light, as well as their physical activity levels. It was found that the individuals who received more morning light had lower body mass indexes. Meanwhile, an observational study from 2016 followed the health habits of nearly 30,000 women. It found that smokers who had a high degree of sun exposure had the same risk of mortality as non-smokers who did not expose themselves to the sun. The lead author of that paper concluded that avoidance of the sun may be a risk factor for health in the same magnitude as being a smoker. This is only an observational study, so it's hard to tease out causation at this stage. But I do believe these intriguing findings warrant further investigation, and certainly support our growing awareness of the sun's importance. Nature deficiency. An additional benefit to all this is that being outside for 20 minutes every morning means we're much more likely to be exposing ourselves to nature. I believe that as a society, we're suffering from a nature deficit. It's now well established that doing activities in nature is associated with improved psychological well-being. It's also been established that the more urbanized our environment, the worse our health. There are many reasons for this, but the World Health Organization says that the urbanization of the planet is having a significantly negative impact on us. The fact is that working out in a soulless gym under artificial light is just not as good for you as working out in nature. A study by researchers in Australia found that those who exercise outdoors on a regular basis have higher levels of serotonin, which is a hormone thought to be involved in happier moods. It also helps reduce fatigue. If you're working out outdoors, you're much likelier to be able to exercise for longer, because you don't have that boredom and fatigue. Being in nature also helps you switch off. We can't always get to nature every day. Either there's no park nearby, or perhaps the time pressure involved makes it simply impossible. But most of us should, at the very least, be able to get outside. Even if we are waiting at a bus stop, for example, we can look at the trees, listen to the birds, get lost in a trance as we gaze at the branches moving in the wind. I know it sounds almost crazy, but I truly believe companies should start giving staff regular light breaks. One of the big problems with our approach to health is that we're preoccupied with sickness and disease rather than well-being. We prioritize reactive healthcare rather than proactive action. I am convinced that if employers took this seriously, they'd have enhanced productivity from their employees. Remember that mid-morning walking break that I take in my office? Yes, it gives me a dose of much-needed me time and helps toward my 10,000 steps. But it also exposes me to natural light, clears my mind, makes me more efficient when I get back, and helps me to sleep better at night. I'm hitting 3 of the 4 pillars with one change. Another tip to get more natural light exposure is to avoid sunglasses in the morning. We want the natural sunlight, or even just daylight, getting into our eyes. That said, I also have many patients who work night shifts, and it can be extremely useful for them to manipulate light using sunglasses. I often recommend to these patients that they use bright light lamps at work during the night to help them stay awake, but then to cut out light during the later part of the shift and wear sunglasses on the way home. I wish I'd known this 10 years ago when I was a resident and seemed to be constantly on night shifts. I always had difficulty sleeping in the day when on a run of 7 nights. By the end of the week, I'd be shattered. I'd also feel quite depressed. I often wonder how different things might have been if I'd applied the principles of circadian biology back then. These days I make a habit of going into my garden every morning. Clearly this is much more pleasant in the height of summer than the grim depths of winter, but even on the coldest days, I'll put on a thick jacket and sit in the garden enjoying my coffee. I also try to go for a 20-minute walk at some point during the morning. I recently saw Barry, a retired bus driver who'd been struggling with his sleep for years. His was a puzzling case. He watched television with his wife every evening, but always switched it off before 9:30. Then he would read in bed next to a dim light for approximately half an hour before settling down. Despite these good habits, since his retirement, Barry's sleep quality had slowly been deteriorating. He was finding it harder to get to sleep and was waking up feeling unrefreshed. It turned out he was spending a lot of his day inside. Although his working life had been spent driving, the big windows of his bus exposed him to generous amounts of daylight. But now, he was spending most of his time in his garage, tinkering with his beloved electric train set. He was reluctant to do much, as his poor sleep was sapping his energy. But I managed to persuade him to go for a 30-minute walk every morning. We identified a newsstand, 15 minutes away, where he'd go to get his daily paper. This ensured he was being exposed regularly to natural light. At my next 2-week follow-up appointment, he reported that he was falling asleep faster and waking up more refreshed. In addition, he so enjoyed his morning walk that he started to go for an afternoon one every day as well, around a neighboring park. One of the great things about this intervention is that you can combine it with others. If you use this time outside as your daily workout, you're checking off another box in the movement pillar. It also helps with me time from the relax pillar, and you are more likely to reach your 10,000 steps a day. But whether you combine it with one of the other interventions or not, if you make light a priority, I promise you will very quickly start to feel the difference. Tips to help you embrace morning light. Pick 2 or 3 that work for you. Have your morning tea or coffee in the garden or next to a window. Don't get your newspaper delivered. Collect it yourself on foot. If you must drive in the morning, leave the car a 10-minute walk away from your destination. If you shop in the morning, park as far as possible from the supermarket entrance. Get off the bus half a mile from your destination and walk the remaining distance. Consider getting a dog and taking it for a walk every morning. Try to take a morning break and go for a short walk outside. 3. Create a bedtime routine. Start your evening wind down with a No-Tech 90 as part of a set ritual. Contrary to popular belief, every single one of us has amazing natural rhythm. While this might not always be obvious when we're busting moves down at the club on a Saturday night, our bodies do in fact run on an elegant, complex system of inner rhythms. As noted elsewhere, we all have a master body clock that keeps its time using signals of light and dark. But our liver also has its own rhythm. So does our blood pressure, our memory, our insulin, our production of the sleep hormone melatonin, our production of the hunger hormone leptin, our core body temperature, our mood, our memory, and so on. We now know that our genome is under much more clock control than we previously imagined, meaning that the very way our genes function can shift with time. It's now thought that a significant part of our genome may be clock-dependent, which means there might be an optimum time when a liver drug, for example, would be most effectively administered. All these rhythms combine to form the awe-inspiring and beautiful symphony that is the healthy human body. So the body has its own intrinsic rhythms, and we need to try and support them. Aside from having a regular sleep time, one way we can do this is by having a constant routine or pathway that leads us towards sleep. This will help us not only to nod off more quickly and enjoy richer sleep, but also to get out of bed feeling more refreshed. We've all got a daily or diurnal variation in our cortisol, CPTF, which is a hormone that helps make us active and alert. It should help us bounce out of bed full of energy for the day. It usually peaks around 1 hour after waking, after which it embarks upon its slow and steady decline for the rest of the day. Breaking these routines can have all sorts of unpleasant consequences. Sleeping in on the weekend, for example, is a well-known trigger for migraine sufferers. A study from June 2017 put these ideas to the test. 61 university students were examined for 30 days using a special metric called the Sleep Regularity Index. The researchers analyzed the students' sleep patterns, the timing of their melatonin secretion, and their academic performance. They found that irregular sleep schedules were associated with significant changes in circadian rhythms, as well as poorer academic performance, concluding that the effect of keeping irregular sleep schedules was akin to jet lag, affecting us as much as traveling 2 to 3 time zones westward. Having said all that, I do know that sticking to the same bedtime constantly is not always going to be possible. The reality is that there will be times when you stay up later than is ideal, whether it's a friend's party, a dinner date, work engagements, or whatever. In these situations, I make one simple recommendation. No matter how late you are to bed, no matter if the next day is a Monday or a Sunday, always get up at the same time. It's my experience that this is one of the most important things you can do for your health. I know what you're thinking. Doesn't this completely fly in the face of what I've just told you about the importance of getting enough sleep and avoiding fatigue? It does, which is why I want you to embrace the habit of napping. Of course, you will have missed out on sleep, but for most of us, staying in sync is better than catching up in the morning. If you did stay up late the night before and are still feeling tired in the morning, it is worth trying to catch up with a microsleep. Alarm for bedtime. Just as important as having a set getting up time is having a fixed routine for going to bed. I remember reading about the superstar chef Jamie Oliver and how he realized he hadn't been prioritizing his sleep for years. To prompt him, he started using a wearable tracker device that would literally buzz when it was time to go to bed. I really love this idea of having an alarm for bedtime. You should make your alarm a signal that the wind down for bed must begin and set it for 90 minutes before lights out. And as soon as it sounds, that's when your No-Tech 90 begins. This is when you turn off all your e-devices, including computers. No exceptions. I don't mind a bit of TV, but would really prefer this to go as well. We're all aware that children